is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehayas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
It's important for the South African government to step up more directly and persuasively to say to a nation, in this case Russia, that you must stand down with your military.
That's Brooks Spector, a veteran U.S. diplomat in Africa, on how Russia's attack on Ukraine puts South Africa in a tough position. Details coming up. And a commission created by Burkina Faso's military junta proposes 30-month transition period before the country returns to constitutional rule. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. Russia invaded Ukraine early today. For African governments, the war raises concerns about their citizens living in Ukraine, as well as possible economic effects. In Nigeria, news organizations report the government issued an advisory saying Nigerians in Ukraine are responsible for their own safety. There are an estimated 4,000 Nigerian students in Ukraine, and there are several thousands more citizens of other African nations there. Zimbabwe's government has pledged to provide plane tickets for its citizens who need to leave Ukraine. On world markets, oil prices are surging to more than $100 a barrel, the highest point since 2014. For oil and gas-producing countries such as Nigeria, Libya, and Mozambique, that could be a boon. But for oil-importing states, higher oil costs raise fear of inflation. Gold prices rose more than 3% to more than $1,970 an ounce, the highest since September 2020, which could help some gold exporters. Of particular concern are grain prices. Wheat's future prices in Europe have jumped to more than $355 a metric ton, well above the record price of $349 set last year. Ukraine and Russia are leading exporters of wheat. The war in Ukraine that began at dawn today will reverberate across the world. In Africa, the war and sanctions on Russia's economy could affect food and energy costs. Alex Smith is a food and agriculture analyst at the Breakthrough Institute in Berkeley, California. His latest article is titled, "A Russia-Ukraine War Could Ripple Across Africa and Asia." In my conversation with him yesterday, he points out that Ukraine has been known for centuries as Europe's breadbasket. Ukraine is the third largest corn exporter and fifth largest exporter of wheat. He told me that Egypt, Morocco, Libya, and Tunisia are major importers of Ukrainian wheat. At least 43% of Libya's wheat comes from Ukraine. A loss of grain exports from Ukraine could push communities in North Africa, already dealing with drought and high food prices, into food insecurity.
Yeah, honestly, it's very scary. A lot of Ukrainian wheat is in eastern Ukraine. It's in the area that is between, you know, Russian troops in the Luhansk and Donetsk region and Kiev, the capital. About 40% of the wheat, to be exact. So if there's a serious land war, there's an invasion, there's a real risk of disruption of that production. You could see like a serious drop in the total production of wheat in Ukraine this year. And that would have this impact on their exports. But maybe more importantly, you could see a real disruption in the trade through the Black Sea. I think numbers that I've seen suggest that about 90%, or maybe a little bit more than 90% of Ukrainian wheat exports go through Black Sea ports like Odessa. So if you do see disruptions in the Black Sea, that could disrupt for a short term, but even for longer term, this kind of wheat exports to places like Libya, Tunisia, Morocco, and Egypt. So these are significant.
How about Russia? Russia is also involved in this in the situation and its connection to Africa, the world. What do you think would be the negative economic impact of Russia to these countries?
Yeah, I mean, so most sort of analyses have been focused on the impact on Russian like fossil fuels. People focus on sort of the closing of Nord Stream 2, the impacts that the conflict would have on gas and energy prices in the EU, and then subsequently globally. So this has an impact on food prices as well. Fertilizer costs right now are at an all-time high. They're about 200% higher than they were at the beginning of 2021. So you see that already has these severe impacts on agricultural production. And as energy prices go up, because fertilizer is a high energy, it's an energy-intensive production, it requires energy-intensive production, that would increase the price of fertilizer and thus increase the price of food all over the world. Secondarily, Russia is a major exporter of wheat as well. They're the number one exporter of wheat. They export more than twice as much wheat as Ukraine. And a bigger portion of their wheat goes to Africa specifically. And you see places like Congo, we pull up the exact numbers, places like Congo, Tanzania, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Senegal, Cameroon, they're all reliant on Ukrainian wheat imports as a significant portion of their total wheat supply. Tanzania, for example, imports about 65% of their total wheat supply comes from Russia. And while Russian wheat is less likely to be disrupted from an invasion, I mean, there's not going to be military conflict in, you know, the areas where wheat is produced. In the past, Russia has halted or limited exports in times of crisis. This happened in 2020 following the COVID-19 pandemic, where they stopped exporting wheat for 4 months to protect their domestic consumer base. And in the face of sanctions and higher costs from sort of all of the sort of overlapping crises of supply chains and fertilizer, there's a potential for Russia to limit or completely stop their exports, which would put the countries that are dependent on that wheat at risk of hunger, food insecurity, and sort of economic hardship.
Well, Alex Smith, food and agriculture analyst at the Breakthrough Institute, Berkeley, California. Thank you for your input, sir.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me on.
As much of the world denounced Russia's invasion of Ukraine Thursday, the Central African Republic's capital, Bangui, hosted a tribute to Russian paramilitaries who helped beat back rebels a year ago. Clement Diroba reports from the capital, Bangui.
In Bangui's city center, a human-sized statue erected last year depicts Central African and Russian security forces protecting a woman and a child. As Western countries tried in vain Wednesday to prevent Russian military aggression against Ukraine, about 100 Central Africans gathered at the monument holding Russian flags. The group was paying tribute to Russian mercenaries who helped defend the capital, Bangui, last year against rebels. Blaise Didacien Kosimachi organized the ceremony. He heads the National Galaxy Platform, a Central African group close to the government that often holds protests against France and the United Nations.
Nous profitons de votre micro pour dire non à tout ce qui est campagne de dénigrement.
He says they say no to everything that is a smear campaign against our army and our Russians, especially by the international press who qualify the Russians as mercenaries. Kosimachi adds, no, the Russians are not here to make exactions. The Russians did nothing. By exactions, Kosimachi means crimes such as rapes and killings. UN experts accuse Russian mercenaries of abusing civilians in the CAR and several other countries. Several of those celebrating the anniversary wore T-shirts that read, "I am Wagner," a reference to the Wagner Group, the shadowy Russian network that supplied the mercenaries. Analysts say Russian President Vladimir Putin's ally, Yevgeny Prigozhin, is behind the Wagner Group. Wagner's fighters provide security for CAR President Faustin Archange Touadéra and have been spotted from Syria to Libya and from Mozambique to Mali. Yefi Keza is a member of the ruling United Hearts Movement Party.
On est en train de changer l'histoire. Vous voyez ce qui se passe au Mali? That's a message for Kidrilos.
He says they are changing history. You see what is happening in Mali, says Keza. This is a strong message that I'm sending to the French embassy today, he says. It is time to cooperate with President Touadéra and to try and liberate the country together, says Keza. We're grateful to the Russians. We are here today, he says, and we have invited the Russians to join us to thank them along with the National Army. No Russians attending the celebration in Bangui, but one Central African Army commander was in the crowd. One man held a sign that read, Russia will save the Donbass from war, referring to the area in southeast Ukraine that Russia declared independent this week before launching its invasion. A CAR government spokesman declined to comment on the celebration. Clémentine Romain for VOA News. Bangui, Central African Republic.
South Africa's government is being criticized at home for its failure so far to condemn Russia's attack on Ukraine. South Africa's a member of the BRICS economic bloc, which includes Russia and its ruling party, the African National Congress, the ANC, has a strong relationship with Moscow that dates back decades. But South Africa also has one of the world's most recognized human rights charters, and as such, says opposition parties, it has a duty to support Ukrainians. Darren Taylor has more.
Opposition parties and civil society organizations accused the South African government of living in the past, just like Russian President Vladimir Putin is in his yearning to apparently recreate this Soviet Union. Critics of the ANC have slammed it for ignoring Moscow's actions. Just because the Soviets supplied its guerrillas with AK-47s, military training and money in its struggle against the apartheid regime in the 1970s and 1980s.
It's important for the South African government to step up more directly and persuasively to say to a nation, in this case Russia, that you must stand down with your military.
Brooks Spector is a veteran U.S. diplomat in Africa, now based in Johannesburg as an international relations consultant.
Simply trying to say it's an even conflict and we have to get everybody to get along, that's not necessarily going to have much impact. This is not one of these circumstances where it's appropriate to be totally balanced and even-handed in all respects, because as we see now, the military machine that is moving is Russian.
Pretoria has said the conflict in Eastern Europe is best handled by the UN Security Council, even though Russia itself is a permanent member of the Council. To Spector and others, it seems as if the South African government is opting out of getting involved by saying it can't interfere in the affairs of other countries.
As far as I can tell, there have been no Ukrainian efforts to overthrow the government of Russia or to occupy Russian territory. That being said, it's incumbent upon the South African government, I would think, to do what it says it believes in, which is non-intervention in other nations and territorial integrity. And if that's true, then it should be saying directly and firmly to Russia that this simply is not going to stand.
He says the ANC doesn't have to impose sanctions on Russia, but it simply must show solidarity with the people of Ukraine, just as many countries supported it in its fight against racist oppression and repression.
South Africa and Ukraine, as far as I understand it, they have had good relations. There probably isn't a great deal of trade, although I will note that I believe South Africa imports grain from Ukraine, and the absence of Ukrainian exported grain is going to have a difficult impact on a number of fragile states across Africa and Middle East and other places.
Spector says there are more than a few good reasons for South Africa to become involved in the Russia-Ukraine situation, not least because it has constantly said it has a special relationship with Moscow as a fellow BRICS member.
And if that's the case, then it should be in the position of saying to a colleague nation, no, please don't do this. This is not right. This is not how we behave as peace-loving and civilized nations. This is just wrong.
But many in South Africa believe the ANC won't do this, just as it has consistently failed to condemn the human rights violations in neighboring Zimbabwe for the past 20-plus years. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Sudan's military leader, General Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, is in Moscow for meetings with senior Russian officials. Dagalo's embrace of Kremlin leaders comes as Western countries are punishing Russia over its actions in Ukraine and amid tensions with Sudan's military government. Samha Kater reports from Khartoum.
Deputy head of Sudan's ruling Sovereign Council, General Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, on Wednesday announced he was heading to Russia. The visit by Sudan's top military leader comes amid tensions between Western countries and Khartoum's military, as the West is seeking to isolate Russia diplomatically and with sanctions for its moves against Ukraine. Dagalo wrote on his Twitter account that his visit aims to expand relations between Sudan and Russia and strengthen cooperation. When asked to comment on the timing of the trip, Sudan's foreign minister spokesman Khalid Farah said it was unrelated to the conflict between the West and Russia over Ukraine. The visit comes in the context of the will of the two friendly countries, Sudan and Russia, to strengthen their friendship in all fields and aspects. The two countries, Sudan and Russia, have historic and old relations. This visit was scheduled ahead and has nothing whatsoever to do with what is happening in Ukraine. Retired Major General Ismail Majzoub, an independent analyst, tells Voice of America the visit appears primarily to be about trade and investment. He notes the delegation includes Sudanese minister in charge of finance, minerals, livestock, and agriculture. But Majzoub says the two sides, both facing Western isolation, could also see the tensions between Russia and the West as an opportunity. Majzoub says Dagalo might want to use the current Ukrainian crisis to open a door for Russia into Africa through Sudan. He says perhaps Russia might also want to take advantage of the anti-military protest in Sudan to try to make a deal on a Russian military base in the Red Sea at Port Sudan. Russia has been seeking a navy base in Port Sudan along the country's eastern Red Sea coast, which would be Moscow's first military base in Africa. Russian President Vladimir Putin approved the draft agreement for the base in 2020, which was put in question by Sudan's transitional government. Sudan's military has been under sustained mass protests against its rule since it took power in October from civilians in a shared sovereign council. But just a week after Sudan's military took power, its army chief told Russian state media that the base was still on the table. General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan in November told the Russian government-owned Sputnik News agency the base was part of an existing agreement. Samah Khatir for VOA News, Khartoum, Sudan.
A commission created by the junta that seized power in Burkina Faso last month has proposed a 30-month transition period before the country returns to constitutional rule. The commission also proposed a transitional government of up to 20 ministers and a transitional legislative body of 51 members. According to a Reuters report, junta leader Lieutenant Colonel Paul Henry Damiba, who ousted President Roch Marc Kabore on January 24th, appointed the commission 2 weeks ago to propose a draft charter and roadmap to the transitional period. The Zimbabwe government says it is proceeding with plans to fire teachers who are striking over a pay dispute. Arigando gives us more on the story.
The Public Service Commission, which is the employer of civil servants in the country, said it was going ahead with plans to replace teachers who disregarded its ultimatum to report for work by yesterday. The Public Service Commission says termination will be without the option of rehiring. Teachers are demanding a return to the pre-2018 October salary of US$540. The government offered a 20% raise in the devaluing local currency and a US$100 allowance. Last week, the High Court overturned the earlier suspension of teachers. Local media quoted Public Service Commission boss Jonathan Mutaonashe as saying striking teachers must be replaced as quickly as possible because they have signaled they are no longer willing to work. The teachers' union maintains the strike is legitimate over long-standing concerns. The teachers have presented a united front negotiating under the umbrella Federation of Zimbabwe Educators Union. Obed Masaraore is with the Agricultural Rural Teachers Union of Zimbabwe, ATUS, which is a member of the organization and represents rural-based teachers.
We completely disregard the unlawful and arbitrary declaration from the Public Service Commission. The Public Service Commission cannot act as if they are law upon themselves. This cadre is governed by laws, and we have clear public service regulations. The procedures of resigning people or firing people are clear, and we don't have such blanket firing of people who are not reporting for duty for different reasons. But in very particular, in this case, it's a collective job action where teachers are engaging the employer, demanding a living wage, demanding respect from the employer. So at the end of the day, the teachers are not moved, the teachers are not going back to work, and there's no teaching and learning taking place in our schools. And we congratulate the teachers of Zimbabwe for defying the unlawful order.
Checks show teachers have generally not been in the classroom since the strike began over 2 weeks ago. Some were there but not teaching. Takawa Firajo of the Progressive Teachers Union of Zimbabwe concurs with Masaraore, saying both the PSC and the Minister of Education are operating outside the law.
It is clear that only a teacher who has been absent for 14 continuous days can have his salary seized. And if we realize that the industrial action or the incapacitation started on the 7th of February, the 14 days would lapse on the 25th. So no teacher is still outside the 14 days. And not only that, the Public Service Commission cannot even seize a salary of a civil servant whose whereabouts are known even after 14 working days. The Public Service Commission can only deem a civil servant to have resigned if that civil servant has been absent for 30 working days and excluding weekends.
Joe added that the teachers' unions are still coordinating, though there's divergence in strategies. One parent, Farai Sadza, who has two kids in secondary school and two in primary, feels the government is costing students and acting unreasonably.
Basically, I feel kids have suffered because they've missed lessons due to COVID, and now it's now the issue of the impasse now between teachers and their principal. I believe there's still room for engagement. There's still room for dialogue between teachers and their principal. Firing of teachers is not the solution for now. There's need for continuity. We can't have new teachers in our schools. I feel teachers demand they are genuine. They're also parents like us. They've got kids who are going to school.
Political analyst Thomas Stolle says teachers have a right to lawful protest and that government tactics of issuing commands are ill-advised.
Government must stop employing jingoistic and intimidatory tactics that smack of bullying and taking teachers for granted. If government acts on its threats, that would be unfair dismissal, for which legal recourse will be warranted on the part of teachers.
Government says inspectors will be dispatched to schools to assess the situation and collate lists of teachers not attending classes. Reporting for VOA, this is Adi Gondo in Bulawayo, Zimbabwe.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehias Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bongo flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05.